First of all, it's not about one guy. I mean, you started the question with it's an overall, we haven't been good. That's a true statement. That's reality. To focus on one person, I don't think is fair. Did Dan have struggle a little bit last week? Yeah. In answer to your question about the more snaps and all of that, we take, you know, a guy has a starting position. We think he's been doing a good job with that. Sometimes when you have plays that to the eye of everybody in there look worse than other ones, nobody sees the plays that he's making when you're covering somebody and don't throw it there. That's always been the case. So I'm not going to go too deep into it, but I think Dan's had a lot of good snaps for us. One will play for us as well. We'll work through who's playing where, what we're doing package-wise. I'm not going to go deep into that because we're getting ready to play a team. I'm not going to tell everybody what we're doing.
Understanding nobody here thinks it's one person, right?
Right.
Are you any closer or any different feeling on that free safety spot now as before?
And we'll see how the week progresses.
Okay.
But we're always looking at that. We've looked at that every week. We're always trying to put people in right spots and get the right players out there. That's no different.
Yeah, Steve, could you go a little deeper into the packages and exactly what the game plan will be for Washington? Thank you.
Let's go now to Mr. Stan Weber joining us via phone. Hello, Stan. How are you?
Well, Stephen, it's a very unusual answer I have for you today.
Oh.
I'm a little sad. That doesn't happen very often. A little sad. Got to tell you why. If it's okay with you.
Sure.
The first reason is not why I'm sad, but I was told I'm supposed to be sad by the Gary Lezak consulting firm.
Oh, boy.
That told me that Jake would use that soccer style and relegated me out of the 6 o'clock hour, that I was supposed to be upset about that.
Is that what you did, Jake? What did you do? You
booted him right out of that 6 o'clock hour,
wow.
Jake.
I gave you the old leave that.
You know, give a guy a little power and then he becomes drunk with it.
Does that mean you're going to refuse to talk football with us and hang up, Stan?
Are you going to be very pouty now, Stan?
There's a little light rain and cloudiness out here, and I expect the weather to be a lot better tomorrow. No, I'm just, I went to the consulting firm, but I'm really not sad about that. But that's what I was told. That when I get laid down by soccer strategy and relegated out of the hour, that I'm not supposed to be happy about that. Okay, that's not at all affecting me. So that was just consulting, and I'm not going to take that consulting. But I am sad. And the reason I am sad is Mike Boddicker had to watch a baseball game played at the highest level, and in the first inning of the game realized there's not a real starting pitcher out there. And those dogs even won the game.
I can promise you he was
for Mike Boddicker that in one of the biggest games ever at this round of the playoffs, right? I mean, teams with over 100 wins, and we don't get to watch a real starting pitcher out of it. Are you kidding? Like playing a football game and using a wildcat quarterback the whole game. Come on. I feel so bad for Mike. I am sad.
You know, it was.
We should check on Mike. We haven't checked on it this morning.
Right. I'm sure he'll be texting Jake soon.
He already texted me this morning.
Oh, what did he say?
After we played the first Elvis song, he said simply, "The King."
That's right.
That's all he texted me. So he's up and listening. So
was he talking about Dave Roberts for using an opener?
I do not think that's what he was talking about.
I don't even like saying opener at this stage of baseball. I mean, I just want to say not using a starting pitcher, okay?
Yeah,
but I thought about Mike Boddicker. I'm fired up for this game, and I'm watching the football, college, NFL, getting ready for K-State, Iowa State, doing a ton of things. Thursday nights are awesome. And I'm going to get some good baseball, and it's going to keep me up late at night. I went to bed at 1 o'clock, so this is great. I'm loving this. Great sports, and all of a sudden, they put an opener out there, and I'm going, whoa! And I thought about Mike Boddicker. I said, this is awful. And then they won. I immediately had to start saying, I hope the Giants win, so at least Boddicker can say that the starting pitcher won the game. But so anyway, that's why I'm sad.
Well, you can look at it this way. They started the game with a reliever, and then they closed the game out with their best starting pitcher who got the save. So, I'm sure Mike was happy with that. And
Supposedly a big time baseball game, but that threw a little curve in there.
It
shows you where we are. A big time baseball game, unfortunately, isn't as exciting as just a Thursday night NFL game to most people. I mean,
You know, that was the rare occurrence where I picked baseball over over the football because I just, you know.
Me too.
Tom Brady, that's enough. I'm good until, you know, until we meet again. But I was very intrigued by that game last night, and I was thrilled to see Max Scherzer come away with his first career save to end the season for the San Francisco Giants. That was fun. And then I got to see the call that everyone will bitch and complain about for the next calendar year, the check swing that that was not to be. But, Stan, we played a clip from Steve Spagnuolo leading into the segment as he's peppered with – was he pummeled, you think, or is he just peppered with questions? A lot of questions about the defense with good reason, but a lot of questions about Dan Sorensen, about Juan Thornhill, and you heard Spag say it's never just one guy. He's had plenty of good snaps for us, but he struggled last week. He's saying all the right things that a coach is going to say. And so now there have been people debating whether or not we're going to see any type of change in the lineup. What do you expect to see on Sunday?
Well, I would expect to see Dan Sorensen most of the time. He doesn't need to play 100% of the plays. But, you know, I do think this is a pretty simple equation. And if we take out the emotion of it for a second, we know the coaches are going to play the best players. You know, it's not like Dan his parents called and got him into the game, you know, that they donated money to Lamar, to Clark Hunt's charity or something. I mean, they play the best players. They want to win. I think this is – now let's put the emotion back into it for a second, Stephen, okay? Full emotion, because I think you have emotion and you have opinions about Dan Sorensen. So I want to ask you this question. If you are upset with Dan Sorensen and his playing time and what he brings to the team, I want to – run this equation by you. Whatever you think Dan Sorensen is, let me promise you the coaching staff is accurate in saying the other guys and the other options are worse. They're worse. That's the emotion you should be talking about, okay? I mean, let's don't beat up on Dan Sorensen. It's like he is the best guy to be out there, or they wouldn't put him there.
But we're assuming that the coaches don't always make the right personnel decisions. I mean, they're not 100% correct at all times. I mean, I watched a franchise put Elvis Gerbach on the field when nobody on the team thought he should be out there, and Rich Gannon should have been out there, and it proved to be one of the worst decisions this franchise has ever made. So, I mean, they're right, you trust it, but also I've heard from more than one person that would know that maybe not everyone's on the same page about the Sorensen versus Thornhill situation. Maybe there's some people in the front office, or maybe there's some people that are scouts that don't agree with the decisions that are being made, or maybe the coaching staff. And so I understand what you're saying, and they're all trying to win, but I'm not willing to say that coaches are 100% correct in all the personnel decisions they make, because I've seen plenty of mistakes that have been made over the years.
Yeah, and then you can, you know, taking your point further, it could all be about utilization factors, okay? You could say, in my thought process, well, Dan Sorensen gives us the best chance to win when we call this defensive package. When we strategize a game out this way, he fits our role the best. But to your point, is that the best utilization of the strategy? You know, maybe you put someone else in there, use a different combination of players, and say we get away from it, and now Dan Sorensen is not the best answer. So it really is a two-part thing where they got to decide what strategy they're going to use, and what they've decided, they think Dan Sorensen is the best answer. I don't think, really, anybody can stand on their soapbox and say he needs to be out there every play, though. I mean, there's normal rotation in the NFL, and so the fact that, you know, he can play 60% of the plays and feature when he's the best needed out there or the best help. But I think, you know, obviously you can't blame one person. I'm in that camp. You know, there are plenty of other players that aren't doing their part that the ball carrier gets to Dan Sorensen or the football gets to his guy. You know, it's not like it's a one-second slant route and Dan Sorensen's laying on the ground and his guy's on the fly. You know, we're seeing Jerry Rice on the run running 70 yards. You know, he made a real bad mistake with the tight end down the field and didn't keep playing. You know, that's unacceptable. That's not talent. That's not anything else. It's unacceptable. But the quarterback had, you know, so much time in the pocket that it is – contributing point to what he's doing. But I have no problem. I'm not going to sit here and say I think Dan Sorensen is a great football player. I do think that Spags and the coaching staff, this group of coaches who, you know, right now with the record the way it is at 2-3, there's all kinds of reactions like this coach doesn't know what they are doing. But I didn't hear that when the season started and we said that Andy Reid, which includes his coaching staff and a lot more than that, a lot more administrative functions of who's going to suit, who's going to be on the 53-man roster, all those decisions, and we were just flat out saying Andy Reid's the second-best coach in football behind Bill Belichick, and that includes Spagnuolo being the defensive coordinator. So this coaching staff, thought of as high as they are, is now getting all kinds of criticism like they don't know what they're doing. I just can't go there. I think that they have a lot of problems on defense, and Dan Sorensen is one of them, but if you pull him off the field or if he pulled a hammy on play one and had to be taken out of the game, I don't think the Chiefs' defense is going to start stuffing people or being good. I mean, it's not about him.
No, he's not. Clearly, he's not the only problem. I mean, Frank Clark not being out there, he's been a problem. Chris Jones didn't play last week. He might not play this week. And moving him to defensive end, that's been a problem. Willie Gay not being out there, that's been a problem. Charvarius Ward not being out there, that's been a problem. The guys that have been out there not playing to their full capabilities. Jaron Reed being a huge disappointment, that's been a problem. I mean, there's obviously, when you're that bad at defense, there's problems all over the field. But there's only certain things that you could fix. And I think that's why people kind of go with, okay, what are legitimate lineup changes that we can make? What are legitimate improvements that they can make right now in season? Because there's, you know, they haven't shown any inclination to sign anyone else on the defensive side of the football. Seems like if you got an offensive weapon that's available, they'll go after him. Whether it's Josh Gordon or the rumors about trying to trade for Marlon Mack, but you're absolutely right, and it's not just the coaches. If indeed they feel like, and Jake made a good point, it's not just evaluating the games, they're evaluating what goes on in practice as well. But if you have a struggling safety that's being overexposed and you're asking him to do too much, and we all agree playing 100% of the snaps is too much, then that's an indictment of Brett Veach and the front office. If they don't have a guy that's good enough to where they think they can get improvement from what we're seeing. And so that's probably why there's got to be some division between, you know, some people in suits and some people wearing headsets. Like, hey, we drafted this guy in the second round. How come you're not playing him? That's natural in professional franchises in all sports.
So the reason this has become a topic, and I think it's not because everybody wants to blast Sorensen. It's because, like you said, Stephen, it's the, well, where's another option? Where could they make a change? And there's at least this idea that Thornhill could, you know, be a step up or a change they could make.
And Tyrann Mathieu kind of helps us figure out who's to blame various players.
But
too.
If you want to know, and Stan, I'm curious your thoughts on this, you want to know what the problem is? Steven, you mentioned the guys. Dan Sorensen is making $2.3 million on a one-year contract. And the reason they got guys out there making that kind of money and starting is because their money is allocated toward Frank Clark making $18.5 million and draft picks that they traded away to get him, and he can't get on the field. I mean, so if we want
a lot of money to Hitchens, a lot of money to Clark,
yep,
a lot of money to Chris Jones. Chris Jones earns it at defensive tackle
when he plays, and he didn't play this past week. But that's one game. You know, for the most part, Chris Jones has produced. Frank Clark is not producing at all, and there's a ton of resources going to him. Jaron Reed's making $5.5 million, and he's not producing. So I think that, you know, if you're gonna sign guys the big contracts, you have to have some players out there who are not making a ton of money, trying to play. And so the guys that are making the big money, they need to deliver. And Frank Clark is not even coming close to delivering right now for this team. If anybody, to me, Stan, should be getting the anger of the fan base right now, to me, it's Frank Clark, because you're hamstrung in so many different ways, draft picks and salary, to pay this guy, and he's not even on the field. And when he is, he's ranked like the worst defensive end in the league right now.
Well, a couple of things. If any should Dan Sorensen talk, I think, Stephen, when you concluded right there, you spun right around where I started. If Dan Sorensen's your best option, let's assume for just a second that maybe the coaches are right, and he's your best option, you're in trouble, right? I mean, the guys are worse than Dan Sorensen. I'm generally going to focus that. whatever the decisions that made it behind the scenes, if they think they got a better solution than Dan Sorensen and the coaches are idiots, I don't go down that path very fast. I just say, wow, you can blame whoever you want, but you just said it in the same way basically that I did. If Dan Sorensen is your best option and you don't have anybody else better, then you got problems. Now, I'm on my way to Manhattan. I got, you know, every once in a while, back now that we're post-COVID on some aspects, we have a big Friday meeting that I'm involved with at the K-State Business School. It's going to be a lot of fun. But it was exactly a meeting like that. I can see myself literally sitting in the car talking to Todd Lebo. He was hosting the afternoon show when Frank Clark was signed. And I just, usually I'm just trying to find open-mindedness and say, you know, I can see where you're going. And I remember without a doubt, I said my immediate reaction after his press conference and what was going down was, I'm not in favor of this. You know, I just don't think what this guy punching a teammate, is something that matters a lot for me about football, you know, not just all the other legal issues and everything else. But those kind of things, I was not really doing backflips about bringing him here. I didn't think what he did at Seattle was worth all the investment they made. And I said, well, let's let it go. So I've never really been expecting much of Frank Clark. And the fact that he had, you know, one of the sacks he had in the playoffs was because the quarterback kept the ball for 14 seconds. And Frank Clark ran around in a big S pattern and grabbed him down. And everyone just bragged him up about getting a sack. And I'm going, that's not a replicable football play. Let's don't brag it up. But he played good enough defense in that Super Bowl run that people thought maybe that's worth what we paid for. But I've always had questions about having him here from the very first day, and you're exactly right. Also, where's the money invested? The Chiefs have made a move in this season, right? But it's an offensive guy. Gordon comes in. You know, it's not a defensive guy that's brought in. It's more money allocated to an offensive guy that can make the offense even better. So the Chiefs really, I think something's coming to light here that I would have talked about any time in the last 3 years. Chiefs defense hasn't been that good. They played well down the stretch. Down the stretch in the Super Bowl championship year, they played pretty well. But overall, that whole season, extremely average. Just middle-of-the-road defense. You know, they got by saying, hey, we were pretty good in the red zone. I mean, we're not great down after down, but in the red zone, we forced field goals. That's kind of what they put their hat on and said, look how good we are. It was really about control of the game. It was having a lead so the rushers could just rush, and they didn't get burned by their poor run defense and everything else. This is just highlighting right now an awful defense, but the Chiefs have been pretty close to bad. They've been average only a smaller part of time since Andy Reid's been around here, really. And everyone thought it was the defensive coordinator that made all the changes, but I think we've been playing with fire, with the salary cap, the allocation of where the money's going, the emphasis. This is absolutely been, for 5-plus years, an offensive football team that protects its defense. The difference I thought, guys, and you haven't mentioned his name very much, the difference I thought that legitimized the Chiefs' defense to step it on up is Tyrann Mathieu. He was the magic on defense that balanced things out a little bit, kept guys accountable, made outrageous plays, and I think covered up for a lot of problems the Chiefs have on defense. And right now, Tyrann Mathieu did that a little bit against the Ravens, but other than that, he's been pretty much a non-factor. And without his magic on the defense, the rest of them are being exposed as being average. And Chris Jones isn't making big plays. He isn't even showing up to play in the last game. And they've made him average at defensive end and defensive tackle. I never would count on Frank Clark. Willie Gay's not going to save this football team. I mean, they have not been good on defense for 5 years. And people haven't been looking at it enough because Patrick Mahomes is dancing in the end zone. The Chiefs have a lead and we're winning.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you guys a question. Stan, I would like you to answer first, and then Nick Buckley will give his answer. You just talked about Tyrann Mathieu and what he's meant to this team the past couple of years, and haven't really seen a whole lot from him the last couple of games, except for him, you know, throwing his arms up the air when Sorensen didn't cover someone. But it had been a foregone conclusion, yes. The Chiefs are going to sign Tyrann Mathieu to a big money extension. They haven't done it yet. And he's been on the field for these failures from the defense so far, so he's part of it. Do you reevaluate that now? Is it still a foregone conclusion that they should sign him to a long-term deal, or have you changed your mind, Stan?
I think that what we're seeing right now brings in giant questions about should they re-sign him, because you only have so many dollars and you've just got to make tough choices in the NFL. And he's had a great career and he's provided the magic to the Chiefs, but if he doesn't provide magic, then you just can't pay him. I mean, he can't just come in and be a really good player at his position and earn his money. I mean, if Frank Clark were playing at a higher level, you'd say, well, at least, you know, he's a really good player. We're overpaying him, but at least he's a really good player. If Hitchens was playing well, you'd say, well, at least he's a really good player. That's not enough for Tyrann Mathieu, because he covers up way more than that. Just like you can't have just a good quarterback running the Chiefs offense and say you're going to win the Super Bowl. You know, don't just give me a good quarterback. We need Patrick Mahomes. And Tyrann Mathieu, if he doesn't have those kind of unbelievable off-script plays for the Chiefs that, you know, gets a turnover when a team, you know, teams are rolling down the field against the Chiefs, which they've done all the time over the last 5 years. The defense has not been very good. But then all of a sudden he picks off the pass, you know, near the 20-yard line on a first down throw, and we forget about it. And Patrick Mahomes goes down, scores another seven. Now we're up by 14, and it makes it easier for the defensive calls and everything else. So I do think it's a big question mark. It's really sad because Tyrann Mathieu's handled himself, I believe, from what we can tell, very well, saying, I'm about the team. I appreciate what the Chiefs organization is about, what these teammates and this organization has done for me, and my time will come. Most every other player in the NFL would have their agent telling them, you got to sit out and hold out because you're in the last year of your contract and they need to pay you. He didn't do that. He's not been a distraction, but maybe he's distracted in his head. I don't know, but he's not playing to the level that would make it predictable for me to say they could give him to sign him to a big contract. I would say right now they're going to probably, he keeps playing like this, and by the way, raising his arms. That's a bad look. It wasn't just last week. He's raised his arm. Hey, for a few weeks he's been raising his arms.
Yeah.
Okay? That is not a leader. That's not a leader that wins championships. You know, I mean, I brag up Tyrann Mathieu more than any player other than Patrick Mahomes for the Chiefs since he signed. I've only said awesome things about him, but his raising his hands up scares me. And he's been doing it a lot when breakdowns in the defense occur or whatever, and he's not made the splash plays. So he needs – when you win with the Chiefs' way of doing things, you win with the superstars. You win with Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce. And you just do whatever you need to cover up where you don't have excellence on the rest of the team. And on defense, they did it with Chris Jones blowing some plays up the middle. They did it with Tyrann Mathieu making superstar plays. And then once in a while, someone else plays, and a guy like Dan Sorensen just kind of fills in the gaps with sound, you know, good hustle plays like the fake punt against the Texans in the playoffs, just being there to do the steady things. But the superstars have got to lead the way for the Chiefs. And Tyrann Mathieu, I'm not saying he's older over the hill, but this really puts in question to me. I'd kind of be surprised with the salary cap situation they have that they'll be able to re-sign him to big dollars.
All right, Nate Bucati, your answer to the question. And also, I just feel like Tyrann Mathieu's doing what everyone else is doing at home watching the game. Like, what the hell going on here?
I even before all this, I was not in favor of signing him to a long-term contract extension.
Son of a gun.
He's going to be on the wrong side of 30 by the time that contract kicks in. And I just think for a team that's already got so much money committed to so many different players, I think we're seeing it right now. You get yourself overextended on some players that are on the wrong side of 30. That's less money that you can spend in other places. I'd rather spread that money around. And I think most times in my life as a Chiefs fan, when they have signed a veteran that we all love to a very lucrative contract extension, which I think is going to take to sign Mathieu, because somebody out there is going to be willing to pay him, they've regretted it. Eric Berry, Justin Houston. I mean, I just feel like most of the time when that happens, it seems like a great deal and we celebrate it at the time. And then it doesn't take very long for us to go, man, that's an albatross. So, no, I think you got to move on, personally.
That's Jake Gutierrez, your thoughts.
Oh, man, that's a tough question. It's a good question, but I'm curious to see how this will affect him on the open market. I mean, if you can get him for a better deal now, because, I mean, and we've only seen just a little over a quarter of the season, so he's still got a lot of time to make some big plays and do some, you know, really good things for this defense. But I think it has changed for me from where we were in the, you know, preseason and leading into this season about signing him. Yeah, I think I would at least be hesitant. I would see what the open market looks like too, though. And you know, I think the rest of the three quarters left in the season will dictate what kind of money he'll make.
Stan Weber is our guest. Stan, we'll take a break. Want to come back with us for a few more minutes of football talk, Stan?
It's all up to Jake. I got to just figure out what league I'm in, where I'm relegated to. What happens when you move back up, Nate? What's that called?
Promotion.
Yeah, you're promoted.
You get yourself a promotion from Jake Gutierrez.
I might get a promotion to get back to the 7:30 hour, get back to where my team was before.
Yeah, you got to watch what you say, though. You might not. He's very finicky here. We'll take a break.
Yeah,
back after this.
If you're Tyrann Mathieu and you may not get a contract, you got high standards around here.
Right.
You know, I know. My butt is on the line.
Jake just threw his hands up in the air like, what are we doing? And we'll be back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. My mom loved Richie Valens. She had a little brother named Richie and my firstborn son named Richie. You think that's a coincidence, Jake? I think not. Soy Capitan.
No such thing as coincidence.
You know what, Soy Capitan?
I heard something awesome. Coincidence is God's way of staying anonymous.
I like the way you go about your business. Once again, on this show, Mind Blown by Jake Pounders. Stan Weber rejoins us. Stan, the injury list is somewhat frightening for the Chiefs. You have Tyreek Hill did not practice. Chris Jones did not practice. Charvarius Ward did not practice. Joe Tooney did not practice. And Blake Bell did not practice. I would expect Tooney to play, considering he broke that hand the first series of the game and just, you know, badassed his way through it. But Charvarius Ward, remember, he practiced full participant last Wednesday and Thursday, but then had a setback on Friday, didn't play, and he hasn't played for a few games. Tyreek Hill, with his quad issue, didn't practice, and then the one, at least defensively, we're continuing to be concerned about, Chris Jones, with his wrist issue, did not practice. Stan, your thoughts on the lengthy injury list for the Chiefs heading into Washington?
Well, first of all, I'd mention Joe Tooney because there's no doubt that he can suck it up and tough it out and get out there and play and put a cast on his hand or wrist, and that'll be the solution. But just saying, oh, the guy's playing is different than what his effectiveness is. If his 100% effectiveness is what he had two games ago, it was probably a little less than that in the game while he was injured. And now when you put that cast on, grabbing with your hands, hand placement, understanding how to get a hold of the shoulder pads, all those things is a big part of offensive line play. They rarely hit with their shoulders and knock people back. They're usually using their hands, shoving people. That's what offensive line play is. So I just want to note that his grades will probably be very good because he's a superstar. But I just want him to get the credit if he does a great job, that it isn't easy, and if the Washington football team plays their best football, they would do it with an unbelievable first-round-ridden front wall that pressures the quarterback. That's how they won last year. Alex Smith quarterbacking them in enough games and their defensive line pressure. They haven't done that yet this year, but if you want to look for some concerns in a game, how could the Chiefs lose to Washington? It would be that the Washington football team fires up that defensive line and causes a lot of havoc. That could happen, and Tooney's injury matters. The one that scares me the most is Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill needs to be as the fastest football player in the NFL. That's what makes him different. And so it scares me, kind of that track mentality. He's a football player, not a track guy, okay? But if you pull hamstrings or have quad injuries that slow you down, and you lose some of your quickness and effectiveness or ability to play all the game, that is a giant blow. Because the Chiefs aren't a Super Bowl team without Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce. Those three must play, or the Chiefs aren't a Super Bowl team. So that concerns me. And then Chris Jones, you know, what is the injury? Can they put a cast on his hand, like I think they will for Tooney, and get him out there? I mean, the Chiefs need him. You're at a crossroads of the season. Every year is a new year. You can't look at the accolades of last year or the potential of your talent. You got to play right now. And when people see a weakness, they attack. The Chiefs are going to get the best of Washington. You know why? When they walk out on the field with those beautiful red uniforms and Patrick Mahomes walks out on the field, you are a feature point in the National Football League. It's like Tom Brady's around. Everyone gets excited. These NFL players play week after week. They grind. They get into a numb state. They play ball. They lose. They win. Whatever. But once in a while, something catches their attention. It used to be back in the day, Monday Night Football. Sometimes it might be Sunday Night Football. But I tell you, it's when a great team like the Chiefs walk on the field and you go, wow, game on. Let's bring it. We're going to have to play our best, and I want to play our best. You're going to get the best of Washington, and they're the home team. So the Chiefs need their superstars to step up and play. I mentioned Tyrann Mathieu, Chris Jones, the three on the offense. If any of them are slowed, not playing, it's a major step backward. And everyone's loving the fact that they think they have a formula to beat the Chiefs with defense, but they still respect the heck out of them. When they walk on the field, it's like, man, we got to play great today. This would be awesome if we could compete with Patrick Mahomes. So it's a scary time, and they need guys like Chris Jones to step up and make plays because this game is the NFL. Even if the Chiefs win in a comfortable way, you can say with a straight face that might be a 10-point win. You know, with the ball the way it might bounce, it's the NFL. Even a great win on the road might be 10 points. That's how close it is. This isn't college football where Alabama should beat someone by 30 points and these injuries don't matter or your focus doesn't matter. It matters a ton, and this is a giant game for the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are fine. I think the Chiefs are going to make the playoffs. I think they're going to be a hard out if the guys are healthy at the end of the year. But I'm counting on winning this game and getting on a little bit of a roll. You know, winning 4 or 5 of the next 6 games is what I think the Chiefs are going to do. But that only is true with this game maybe being the hardest one. When you have doubt in your mind, can you, and people want to attack you the way Washington's going to, seeing what Buffalo did, can the Chiefs bounce back and win? I hope that the superstars are healthy like Tyreek Hill.
Hey, Stan, before we run out of time, let's talk some Farmageddon here. K-State, Iowa State. Usually I feel like this is a good game. I know last year was a different story, but everybody's expecting this one to be a good one again. I guess, can you just give us maybe one or two things we should be watching for when it comes to this big game tomorrow?
Well, let's just make it simple and talk about the quarterbacks. They've become good friends because they've gone to the Manning camp together, and they're really established guys. Both started for their school more than anybody has in the history of their school. And Skylar Thompson's return to K-State, while it was a great feat for him to even get out there, he probably played his best game, gave you the best look that you can that he might be an NFL player throwing the ball around the yard. 41 passes. Remember, K-State threw only 13 times against Nevada, and everyone said, oh, man, you're only going to be able to run, no passing game, receivers aren't good enough and all that. And that's not the case with Skylar Thompson there. So we're going to watch, you know, how good is the K-State passing game going to be against a great Iowa State defense? And on the other side, Brock Purdy. You know, he's getting ready for his 40th start at Iowa State, has all the records, one of the few quarterbacks in Big 12 history to have over 10,000 yards passing and 1,000 yards rushing in his career, just an unbelievable record breaker. And how will he play? When he plays his best, it's just hard to beat Iowa State because Breece Hall is going to be a constant. So let's see how the quarterbacks play. That'll be a big question because there's a chance Skylar Thompson can match him blow for blow. And there's a chance that Skylar Thompson might be the dominant quarterback over Brock Purdy, but we'll see. The quarterbacks, how do they play? Obviously, and most football games matter, but especially tomorrow is a place to look.
Stan Weber, you are the man. Before we let you go, I need your official prediction for Chiefs and Washington. You said it doesn't matter what the score is as long as they win, but we want to know what's the score going to be.
I'm going to go Chiefs 31. Washington 20.
Sold. I like it. I'll take it.
He's bouncing back. They may not win the division, but they might. It's not nearly as cloudy and ugly as everyone thinks. Let's let Gary Zlizak tell us officially the sun is coming out.
That's right. And maybe that extra game will play into the Chiefs' favor this year because they might need it to catch
That's
up
right.
to the Chargers.
Stan, number 17. Did you hear Jake just so easily saying that the point of the season we are? He didn't get into the, hey, we're about halfway done.
No,
he remembers there's a 17th game. the math is different now.
He's a true professional. He's an absolute professional and a gambling addict. So he knows all the games and has the schedule. Well, I just apologize for that, but just trying to give accurate descriptions here. Stan, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, great talking to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Always good talking to Stan, you know. What are you laughing in there for? The hell's so funny? I just try to, this man knows the schedule is my point.
I don't know what's funnier, him.
What?
You calling me a true professional, right? You know, or Stan thinking that I know what's going on.
But just, the point is, this guy knows, he may not know much, but he knows the schedules.
He knows he knows the point spreads.
He's ready for it. Because if there's any guy that was ready to embrace a 17th game, it's Mr. Jake Pounders.
And I will say, we will make a note.
You ever say no to more NFL? No, you don't.
I'm not a gambling addict because I was taught by my father.
Go ahead.
You never bet what you don't have.
There it is, right there.
You never bet what you don't
there
have.
There it is, right there. But you're addicted to the rush, aren't you?
A little bit.
The feeling, just the feeling of a big win. Doesn't it? You, how could you duplicate that, really?
You know, normal people bet on Hawaii every Saturday night.
Right. That's what I mean. Hey. If anyone's ever looking to watch some Hawaii football, then have some meaning behind it, find Jake, because that's a guy that he'll tell you all about football down in Hawaii and all the trends and everything.
9 o'clock, I need some action.
All right, before we go to Gary Lezak again, if you've been listening to the show today, and you guys know for as long as I've been on the radio, I talk about my family a lot. I always talk about my mom because she was my best friend and she was the single most important influence in my life as a kid, and I give her all the credit in the world for who I am, where I am, and how I got here, and just even being on the radio, right? And so she passed away. It's 15 years ago today, which I find to be unbelievable because I can hear her voice. I can think of things. It doesn't seem like 15 years. That's all I can tell you, man. And so I'm choosing to celebrate today. As Jake said, it's an angelversary. And tonight I'm really excited. I'm going to go with my wife and all my kids. We're going to go have dinner. And since the girls, my 12-year-old twins, never had a chance to meet my mom, one of my twins looks just like her, and the other one's named after her. So they cannot get away. We're all going to sit around at the dinner table, and we're each going to tell stories to my twins about my mom so they can get a better idea of who she was. And they hear me talk about her all the time anyway, but actual stories I told Richie to Phil, try to, you know, dig in and think of some things maybe you haven't told the girls. Something funny. Maybe they haven't told me. I don't know. Because, like, my mom and Richie were just like this. And Richie is a musician because of my mom. She started him in piano lessons when he was in third grade, and she told me, don't you ever let him quit because he'll try, but he has a gift for music. And so she used to always tell me, and she was so, like, even when it looked like I'd never make it on the radio, she goes, just go to the radio station and tell them you want to do a show because you're funny and you know a lot about sports. I go, you know, Mom, that is absolutely ridiculous that you're telling me to go to a radio station and just tell them that. Because that's, they're not going to, and ultimately ended up going to a radio station and telling Chad that. And he put me on the air. So that's how it worked. So thanks, Mom. But she'd always tell me, someday Richie's going to be on the radio and I'll be able to hear it. Well, you know what? I still think he's going to be on the radio someday, you know, and she would always talk about that and she'd try to get him to sing. And Richie was, even to the last couple of years, was always kind of shy about singing, right? But she'd always say that someday he's going to be on the radio. So to accelerate the process, I can't control a lot, but I can control that. So he's going to, boy, Richie's going to be pissed when he finds out about that. But he's not up. And you know what? Hey, out there, nobody tell him. If you see my son, Richie, don't tell him about this. So at Christmas, he's such a thoughtful kid, and for Christmas, for a present, he did a song for me. And so he did all the instruments at his home studio, played every instrument, put it all together, and then sang. And he picked a song that was one of my mom's favorite songs because it reminded her of my grandfather, her father, who's named Danny Ontiveros. And they played this song at my grandfather's funeral. And he passed away just a few months before my mom did. Because my grandmother, my grandfather, and my mom all passed away within months of each other in 2006. And so, you know, and Richie was just 7, 8, 9 years old. And he remembers everything. He's a smart kid. And so just out of nowhere, he sends me, because I just emailed your Christmas present to you. I said, well, what is this? Like a gift certificate or something, or a credit somewhere. And so, and it was a song. And I started playing the song, and it was the song that he remembered of my mom loving and reminding her of my grandfather and all these things. And so she always wanted to hear Richie on the radio. And so wherever she is right now in heaven, there, I'm going to play the song, a little bit of it, and then we'll go to a break. And so hopefully Richie won't be mad. But if he is, I'm sorry. It's for your grandma. You can't say no to that. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Must be the clouds in my